Welcome to React Roundup, the podcast where we keep you updated on all things React related. This show is sponsored by Raygun and produced by Top-End Devs and Envoy. Top-End Devs is where we create top-end devs who get top-end pay and recognition while working on interesting problems and making meaningful community contributions. And Envoy, which provides remote design and software development services on a task basis. So clients only pay after the tasks are delivered and approved. In today's episode, we will talk about building and maintaining an open source project. My name is Lucas Paganini. I'm your host in the podcast. And joining me in today's episode is also the host, Chris Fruin.
Hello, everybody.
And a special guest, Evan Roussakas, which is a developer advocate and engineer for Preset.io and member of the Apache Superset PMC.
Hi, nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on the show, Evan. So let's get to it. So we're going to be talking about building and maintaining an open source project, but let's give some context to the audience first. So what is your experience on that matter?
Yeah, so I've been working with Preset, the commercial version of Apache Superset, for almost 5 years now, since the inception of Preset. Preset's CEO is the original creator of Apache Superset, which it predates the company. But what Apache Superset is, in short, is a business intelligence tool where you can connect basically anything in the modern data stack that speaks SQL to this tool, and you can write queries using a very advanced SQL IDE. And then with those queries, you build data sets, and with those data sets, you build charts, and with those charts, you build dashboards. And then you can really dig around in your data and build all kinds of stuff and get deep on analysis. And of course, this being an open source tool, it's a very gigantic code base full of all kinds of front end goodies. And then what we do at Preset is we take that open source project and we run the commercial version of it. It's a SaaS project where we run a managed, easily scalable, much easier to run version of Apache Superset that's kind of plug and play and has a lot of bells and whistles added on top.
Awesome. So just to make it clear too, because you're working for Preset.io, which sells a commercial managed version of Apache Superset. But you also work directly in the open source repository for Apache Superset, or do you guys only work in your own forked version, which has like enterprise features?
It's a little bit of both. My particular role is mostly working with the community. So there are a bunch of different individuals and organizations that are contributing to the open source project Apache Superset. So, all sorts of household name companies are playing in this code base. And so a lot of our contributions from Preset are coordinating with those other folks and those teams, which is really kind of the interesting part for me of working in open source, is that kind of cross-company collaboration is pretty neat. But we provide most of our code changes to Apache Superset directly. And this is a whole interesting topic that people do fork Superset, and there's a lot of danger and risk in forking. You get this fork drift problem, and it becomes hard to maintain that, especially if it's a fast-moving code base, which Apache Superset is. So the bulk of our, well, I don't know if it's the bulk, but a lot of our contributions go back to the open source, and then we pick it up from there, and we maintain a few features on top of the open source code base. And the more we put back in open source, the easier it is to maintain those features and those cherries and things like that.
Understood. But the features that you have, they're specific to Preset. They are not in the open source repository, correct?
That is correct. So we have a lot of different things. Actually, even the fundamental difference between Preset and Superset is what you get out of the box is not just Superset, where you log into Superset, but we have something called Preset Manager. And what Preset Manager is a UI where you can spin up many, many instances of Superset. So typically open source people, users of Superset, will run an instance hosted somewhere on the internet, and they log in and they connect to their data and build some dashboards and stuff. But in our world, we call a superset instance a workspace. So you can spin up several workspaces. You might have them for different teams or different departments or different regions in the world, or, you know, dev stage prod kind of workflows where you're moving these charts and assets across some sort of pipeline. Lots of different use cases for these workspaces, but you get several instances of Superset to play with. But then on each instance of Superset, we have a bunch of differentiators, like the homepage of the product is completely rewritten. What you get on Preset is kind of an enhanced version of what you would get with Superset. Or most recently, we've added what we call AI Assist, which is using LLMs to do natural language to SQL generation. So you can just kind of say, you know, grab me this and that from my data and use this as a dimension and, you know, just give it a very human inquiry and it will generate the SQL for you. So that really helps kind of democratize data across teams that might not be SQL experts. But yeah, there's lots of other little things too. We have like a DBT integration, all kinds of things bolted onto Superset.
Understood. So there are, I guess, two main directions that we can take from here. And maybe if we have enough time, we can go into both, actually, which I think would be pretty cool. But generally, Chris knows we tend to take longer than we expect on the subjects. So I don't know. But one direction is understanding, like, for getting the commercial version that you guys created and just focusing on the building and maintaining Apache Superset. So how can anyone contribute to that? And how is the experience of maintaining and helping others that are getting started on it? But then there's also the side about which connects to what we were discussing with Max Stoiber in our previous episode. So if anyone's curious, go back one episode. We talked to the creator of Styled Components and we had some discussions about how there are many tech companies nowadays that they are selling a product which also has an open sourced version. And that exposes several challenges because, well, a lot of people just think, hey, if I can get it for free, why would I pay? And developers have this amazing ability to think that it's going to be very easy to host and maintain things themselves. Well, until something crashes. But until that happens, we have a feeling that we will be able to maintain it very easily. And there is absolutely no reason to have other costs to help us with that. So I think it would also be interesting to talk about this because that would also shine some light to people that are considering having something open source, but they are afraid of not making any money on top of it. And I'm not even talking about word domination, I'm just talking about you getting paid for all the hours and all the work that you put into something, right? So we should definitely create an environment where people are encouraged to work on open source and they don't feel like they're giving up on making money from their time invested into this. So I think this would also be an interesting conversation. So perhaps we could go a bit into the former and then we could take a deeper approach into the latter because I think you might have lots of insights from your experience at Preset. So yeah, starting with just the open sourced version of it, what do you think it's interesting for people to know about the challenges and differences between building and maintaining something that is meant to be open sourced versus building and maintaining a closed source system?
Yeah, there are a lot of differences in kind of how the whole thing runs. There's two aspects to it, I guess. There's kind of the governance side of it, which is where the Apache Software Foundation comes into ASF. So there's a whole process side. But then there's also kind of the code base itself and just the scale of it and the expertise that different people bring to that code base and what they're contributing. So on the ASF side, just talking about the kind of model of how Apache runs a code base, it's interesting because it's not like a normal code base where you might go to work as an engineer and you just sit down and start coding and opening PRs and just, you know, smashing changes into the code base. You can't really do that. You can do that for bug fixes and small features and things like that that aren't going to change any interfaces or, you know, constitute a breaking change. And you find very quickly in open source that a lot of small changes will be considered by someone out in the universe as a breaking change. You know, you move a button and it breaks up some automation for them. What we do is we have these email lists and we have to get consensus around anything that's considered controversial. And that's something you don't typically do in a company, right? Somebody just decides, we're going to do this, we're going to move that, we're going to change the other thing. But here you have to either do lazy consensus and say, okay, everybody, you've got 3 days to object to this thing, or you can open up what we call a SIP or a superset improvement proposal. And it's really kind of like a lot of engineering teams have spike documents where they say, we're going to make a big architectural change. Here are some approaches. Here's why we considered this alternative, but didn't go that route. And we do this very publicly on GitHub in an issue. And we take that stuff to a vote. And as you become more and more ingrained in this code base, in this community, you might get voted in as a committer because you've made enough changes and people start to trust you to review code. And then after you become a committer, maybe at some point when you're really contributing on a community side, you become a PMC member like I am, which is the project management committee. And that's when you really start kind of dealing with even more of this Apache stuff. So it's in some ways it's slower due to process than a proprietary code base. But at the same time, that kind of helps ensure stability when you're dealing with a lot of contributors coming in from out in the wild that may or may not know the code base very well and or the patterns and all that sort of stuff. So there's the governance side to it. But then the other interesting thing about maintaining an open source code base is just the amount of feedback and contribution you get from widely disparate sources. You find out about new use cases every day for the product itself, and that leads to people filing all kinds of different issues you didn't expect to see, bugs or otherwise. And then fairly often, a good number of those people will actually contribute code. And going through that code is really a big part of the job. I don't know if that's so true for a proprietary code base, but in an open source code base, you're a maintainer as much as a committer, and you know, you're kind of filtering out all these contributions and helping people, nudging them in the right directions to maintain the right patterns. Like, don't use less, use emotion for CSS and JS. Or, you know, use this component instead of that component, all these little things.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Like, I wouldn't think too much if I were doing small changes in a proprietary code base. But you're right, you never know which dependencies people created from the structure of an open source project. So maybe there is somewhere an automation that is relying on that button being that specific hex color of red. Although if that's the case, it's pretty much asking to break, but nonetheless, it's, I understand that might be a thing. That kind of, like, to be fully transparent, that makes me want to, that maybe disencourages me from wanting to contribute to those projects, because it feels more bureaucratic than contributing to like, you would think, for example, if you're working at the search engine indexation at Google, that would be very bureaucratic to get your code in production, because it's such a huge project and so many people depend on it. But what you said kind of make me think that it would be easier to get my code approved at Google than it would be in a heavily used open source project.
I don't know. It's an interesting question. I used to joke that I'd rather work at a small startup or an open source, because if I went to go work at Facebook or Google or you name it, then, you know, I might spend 6 months trying to round a corner on some button. And I think that's kind of true. Like, if you look at Google's new login, UI. You know, that thing was coming for a long, long time. And we could make that significant of a design change in Superset in just a couple of days, you know, no big deal. So there is a little bit of process to it just to make sure that all these different teams and people are kind of pulling in the same direction and we agree on where the project's going. But once there's an agreement made, it's actually very easy to follow through on those new patterns and the kind of the design direction we want to go.
Yeah, I had a question there about that. So I think you mentioned kind of like changes or like more like change requests. But how do you guys handle like a completely, I'm looking here at the repo, a completely new visualization, for example. Is there also a process there? Like maybe it's, you know, you guys say, this is basically the same as this one, or how does that, like, I guess, so as opposed to a change request, more like a completely new feature, how does that look?
Yeah, that's it's kind of case by case. So if somebody wants to add a new visualization, for example, we did pass one of these SIPs, one of these improvement proposals, to say that as kind of a core visualization library, we're going to use something called Apache eCharts. So a bit of a sibling project. And that works really great. They have a fantastic product, and you can build all kinds of charts and graphs of what they've built. But there are exceptions to that. And so, you know, for our geospatial stuff, we're using DeckGL. eCharts isn't going to scratch that itch. And there are all kinds of other things where it's sometimes just easier or better to build something a little bit more bespoke. So in terms of adding a new plugin, the first question we would ask as a project is kind of like, is this something that people are going to use widely? Is it going to be adoptable by a lot of companies or individuals? And therefore, will it be maintained? I think the maintenance footprint of an ever-growing code base is something we consider very seriously. So we don't just open the doors and say, everybody throw in 100 plugins, because somebody's got to keep those things updated and their dependencies and a million other things. So if it's a plugin of great utility, we'll say, could you do this with eCharts? If not, no problem. Let's just make sure it maintains all the little features like drill down and cross filtering and all the stuff that we consider, you know, a first class visualization. And if people want to do just something totally wacky that nobody else is going to use for their genome sequencing visualization or something, then they can just do it on their own repo and import that NPM module into Superset's front end and no problem.
We could talk more about that side of things, but honestly, I think those were my main curiosities. And if unless you guys have any other questions about the open source side of things, I'm actually more curious to go deeper into Preset.io and the commercial version of it. So what do you think, Chris?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, let's do it. So Evan, why don't you tell us the context behind Preset? So why was the company created, and like, when was it, and what was the reasoning behind it?
Yeah. So Max, our founder and the Superset creator, started the company 5 years ago. And I think that was born out of a need of this growing open source project that a lot of people were adopting. But one of the things behind it that makes it a little bit difficult for open source use is that it is a big project with a big footprint, and there are a lot of intricacies to it. And when people start connecting their business data to it, it becomes a very sensitive thing. The availability of it, like the high availability, is an issue. And then there's also the security angle, because, you know, who knows what sort of data they're connecting. But all of that stuff adds up to, for most companies, kind of a full-time hire or sometimes even a team of people that will maintain it. You've got to have people that are going to install it, people that are going to maintain the infrastructure. Then you've got to have people that are going to do any sort of upgrades and migrations as new versions come out. They've got to work on the securing and the configuration. There's just a million little knobs you have to turn to keep it humming along happily. And that usually requires some pretty significant staffing. So what we did was remove all of that. just kind of remove the barrier to entry like so many SaaS projects. So if you want to spin up Superset, you can sign up on preset.io. You can get it for free for, you know, just a very limited use case. I think it's like 5 users and 1 workspace. But if you outgrow that need, then great, start paying. No big deal. Swipe a card and you're off to the races. And with that, you get all that stuff out of the box, like SOC 2 and SOC 3 compliance. So, you know, we have all that stuff. You don't have to go through all that paperwork. We have a lot of the database drivers and things pre-installed that people commonly use. We have support systems. So there's people you can reach out to ask questions of how do I configure this? How do I configure that? But I think most importantly, you don't have to do any of the upgrade or migration headaches as new versions come out. For example, just 2 days ago, actually, we released Superset 4.0, but Preset customers were already running that. Right now on the repository, we're getting a lot of questions about, hey, this migration didn't run against this database for some reason, help me debug this. But every Preset customer has effectively already been migrated and probably didn't even know that occurred. So that's kind of one of the sales pitches, I guess, is it's kind of easy. There's no maintenance. But then also we have those other features built on top of it to very easily sync with DBT or Kube or other semantic layers. And then we have, you know, the AI assist feature I was mentioning briefly there, but we're trying to make it easier and easier and easier to kind of democratize this tooling and your data across more and more seats in your organization.
Gotcha. So basically, you take away all the pain of managing and updating Apache Superset instances, and also make sure that it stays up so that it doesn't just die randomly. And if it does, I imagine there would be backups and et cetera to, yep, to prevent the final user from losing their data.
Yeah, everything's very auto-scaling and all of that good stuff you'd expect of kind of a commercial BI project. So if there's an organization out there that's considering, you know, moving to Tableau or Power BI or any of these other things, this really takes Superset out of the realm of being an open source tool that, okay, I'm going to have to roll this up and do all the infra work and do all the hard parts. And it makes it easy to use like any other commercial BI project, with the difference that the price point is much, much lower. All the features are very comparable. It does all the things, but it's cheaper. And then you also have the ability to not just use a tool that feels like a more proprietary commercial tool, but you have the open source angle still. So if you have, like you said, a plugin that you want to contribute or a bug that you care to be fixed or some whatever it is, you actually have the power to go and contribute that tool. You don't have to make a feature request to some company and hope that they get to it in 3 years. You can actually just go open a PR and then the thing will show up on Preset in a couple of weeks or whatever.
Gotcha. So which kinds of companies are, not just companies, right? But what is the customer that would benefit more from Preset than from running the Apache Superset themselves? Because I imagine there are different profiles, right? So there's the profile of someone that wants what Preset offers, and there's the profile of people that they don't want it. They just want to run the open source version themselves, or maybe something else that is neither one nor the other. But what are the different profiles, and how do you guys navigate this universe of trying to sell something that is at the same time available and not entirely for free because they don't offer the management and et cetera, but the main functionalities are offered for free? So how do you navigate that?
Yeah. Well, I wish I had the sales team here to answer that question more appropriately, but I think the way I would look at it is, we can kind of get people at both ends of the scale very easily, because if you're a new user, say like you've never used Superset, or you're a one person team or a very small data team, and you just want to try it, it's very easy to log into Preset and spin up an instance of Superset in a matter of seconds, instead of figuring out like, okay, I need to, you know, set up all this stuff on AWS or whatever it is. and configure all of this and, you know, just go through all the docs and figure out how do I spin this up. So we remove that pain away for the right away for the casual user, and they can just sign up and try it and kind of grow into it if they adopt it as a company. And then at the other end, you've got the more enterprise customers, and they already have, you know, huge amounts of users, and probably what they're looking for is more of the reliability, the certification, and all of that stuff that comes with, you know, not hiring a team to maintain an open source project. So for those users, they might want to have like embedded dashboards in their own product, or they might be reselling preset workspaces to different customers for certain use cases, or in certain cases, one of the customers we couldn't adopt for a little while were people that want to run it on their own infra. But now we have what we call managed private cloud. So if you need to run your own AWS cluster, you can install preset, and it's kind of a certified version of Superset, essentially, that's going to work very reliably and include all our features and stuff on your own AWS cluster. So I think it's that middle group where you're not quite dependent on Superset running really well at scale, and you're not really small in the experimental phase. But if you're kind of in that phase where like, okay, I can get this spinning up, we can save a few bucks and it's good enough for now. That's one use case for open source. And the other one is if you really want to customize it. There are a lot of people out there that do fork the code base and they just kind of run wild with it. They just start replacing parts and changing components and all of that. But then that fork drift problem happens, like I mentioned, where we have something like 12 or 13,000 dependencies in our front end code base. And it's pretty hairy sometimes to upstream some of those changes when a lot's happened on the source repo. But yeah, so I think preset has its reasons to appeal to customers of all scale, but usually people come from either the enterprise side or kind of the, hey, we're new to Superset side, let's try this out.
And do you guys also help out people that are not preset customers? They are just using the open source version. Because I imagine that could also, well, there's the aspect of just helping the community, but there's also a marketing channel, right? Like people are asking for help and you have a company that solves all those pains. It would make sense to introduce yourself to them.
Yes, absolutely. So there is a little bit of that, like, hey, you could not have that problem, to be said from time to time. But at the same time, it is an Apache project, and I'm a PMC member, and Apache has a thing about project neutrality. So theoretically, any number of vendors could come out of the woodwork and sell Superset in their own way. And there are kind of a few out there that don't do it like we do, but they do it. And I think the interesting part is that we do see, just being transparent, of course, the Superset community is kind of top of funnel for us. People discover it, it's out there, and then they say, okay, how can I ease my pain and find another way to do this? And moving to preset's a natural choice. And we have this kind of lack of vendor lock-in. People can export their dashboards and go back to open source. They can move between the commercial and open source versions very freely. We have a CLI that handles that. So that's something you don't get from other proprietary services also. But as far as contributions and supporting users, we look at the GitHub issues every single day. And we're looking at Stack Overflow and Reddit and anywhere else that people are talking about Superset and try to help people out, not only because we want to, you know, make people feel cozy with Superset and start to evangelize it and just that networking aspect of it, but also these people experiencing issues are probably experiencing valid things that our customers will too. So there's a bit of a kind of canary in the coal mine aspect to it, that if I see a issue pop up on the GitHub repo, it's probably only a matter of days or weeks until one of our customers reports it. So us helping the Superset open source users helps the preset customers, and it's a very virtuous cycle.
Understood. Another question regarding this is, so you guys have a commercial license for it, okay? And do you need to go through any process in order to be allowed to have a commercial version of the product? Or can anyone just go in the repository, fork it, and and start selling their own version, and that's it.
There are some rules around it. So Apache, the Software Foundation, owns the trademarks and all of that. So according to the license, anybody's allowed to use it, basically. I mean, it's the Apache 2.0 license, so there are minor restrictions. It's not like MIT where it's like, take this code, do anything you want. But you're free to run a commercial version of it. That's allowed. The only real trick is that you make sure that you're transparent about the relationship of the business entity to the open source project and community and foundation. So there are branding guidelines, like, you know, you have to say Apache Superset, at least in the first couple instances on a page. You can't just say Superset, or you can't say Superset by Preset. It might be Preset powered by Apache Superset or something like that. You just have to make it known that you are not the owner of Superset. You are not the creator of Superset. You're just using this open source project that's owned by Apache. And as long as you're transparent about all of that, it's okay to do this. So there are a lot of like product or platform as a service kind of companies out there that let you spin up whole open source stacks and, you know, click some buttons and you'll get these databases and these semantic layers and BI and whatever else you want to put in. And they are essentially selling Superset. But I think we're the only ones that are really selling kind of a leveled up version of Superset that's maintained by the committers and PMC of the Superset project. So it's not that Preset controls Superset in any way, but we're as close as you can get to official, I guess, if that's safe to say. I'm not even sure if I should say that. But
okay, that makes sense. Yeah, like at the end of the day, at least the trademark's got to be from the original company.
Right.
Yeah. Chris, do you have any other questions?
I just think it's neat the contrast from the last episode, kind of, because Max was totally like, it should be, well, I don't think he was totally for like closed source, but I just love what you mentioned, that you can use, you know, you can use public, if there's an open source version of it, you can use like what you see on Reddit or what you see in issues. That's like, as you said, like your top funnel for stuff that could come down the pipeline. So I think the debate continues, and I think there are still huge advantages to having an open source part of an enterprise product. That was a really interesting point.
I think the same is true for anything in open source. Even if you're building a proprietary project and you're using something like styled components, if you are using styled components and you encounter some edge case and it doesn't do exactly what you want, you have the ability to go and open a PR in their code base and hopefully get it out in the next version. So same thing applies here.
But yeah, it's something different, right? Because what Max was saying the previous episode is that he's not against open source. He was saying that it makes it harder for a company that is starting to build something to make it open source. And in a way, like, this is a complete different scenario, because although Preset helps to build and maintain Apache Superset, they don't do it alone. You know, like, by the way, Apache Superset already existed before Preset. You know, it's not like Preset was founded and they created this product and made it open source and also made a closed version of it. So the company that founded it was, or well, I don't know who founded it, but it's incubated in Apache, right? So let's just say that it's from Apache. So it would be different if we were saying that Apache is trying to make money out of it, and they also have this open source version, because then you can see how problematic this is, because Preset, for example, would be a competitor of Apache if Apache were trying to sell Superset on a commercial basis. So they would be incentivizing a lot of competitors to join the market and start from where they left off, you know? So that definitely makes things easier. So I think that's the comparison that Max was making. So you have companies like Gatsby that they have their main product completely open sourced. So people are just not paying for whatever they offer paid, you know?
Yeah. And so this particular project, the open source version of it, was actually born out of Airbnb. So it was originally, you know, an Airbnb hackathon project that just kind of grew within the organization. And when it got to a certain kind of critical mass, they just decided to open source it. And to this day, Airbnb is one of the big contributors to the project. I talk to them every single day. And that's kind of one of the fun parts of the open source aspect of it, is kind of working across those lines. But you're right that a lot of commercial products out there create their code base and then they call it open source and it's on GitHub. It's kind of code available. And what we're seeing this pattern where a lot of people will even create the initial versions of their project as open source and give it an MIT license or an Apache 2.0 license or whatever. And then at some point they swap the license out on you. It's like a big bait and switch. This just happened to us with one of our dependencies that we're trying to figure out what we can do with it right now. Can we even use this in our project anymore? Because they started taking money, they changed the licensing, and they kind of pulled it away. But that's not going to happen here because we're at that point where there's enough different organizations and individuals contributing to this code base that it would not really behoove us to fork. We'd be losing out. And that goes for any of the people in the project.
I think that's it in terms of the main content itself. So, Evan, is there anything that you feel that we haven't touched, but you think it's super important to mention?
Not particularly. I mean, if you ever wanted to talk about the problems of kind of migrating between component libraries or testing frameworks or any of this stuff on a giant code base, we can talk about how that whole process goes. But I think in general, I would just encourage people to go ahead and consider, for all your business intelligence needs or your data needs, just go straight to open source. I think it's going to be a healthier thing that's here to stay and here to win in the long term. And so, you know, try out Apache Superset, whether it's the open source version or sign up on preset.io for a free account, kick the tires and see where it takes your team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So talking about that, let's do a quick round of promos then. So Chris, what are you currently working on that you like to mention to the audience?
Sure, yeah. As I've been talking in previous episodes, I'm working on this thing called Code Video. Basically, it's a declarative way to create animated videos just with code. So I finally got, this is a world exclusive of the API endpoint. It probably will work for like one case. It's probably mostly broken, but basically you send some JSON and you'll get a URL to a AWS MP4 video back. But it's super beta and still working on it. So
awesome. I'm going to put a link to that in the comment section too. So if you're listening to the show from YouTube or anywhere else that has a comment section, then you might be seeing that. Otherwise, you can search for preset.io for the company that Evan works from. And you can also search for api.codevideo.io/swagger for the API of Chris's project. Evan, how about you? Like, it was kind of the episode was kind of a promo at the same time, right?
But yeah.
Let's make it official now. What are your promos?
Well, I guess not really a promo. I guess I already kind of threw out the preset.io thing. Everybody sign up. But if we're talking about projects we're working on, I'm doing one that's a little bit more React-centric. So maybe I'll bring that back for the show, which is that I'm building in Superset a dashboard right now that I'll be contributing to the community as one of the Superset examples built in. That's going to, what we do is we use a lot of ESLint stuff in our code base. And you can use that for all kinds of interesting purposes. Like say we're migrating from class components to functional components, for example, or we're migrating from less to emotion. And we have all of these projects and we can roll up the metrics around that and say, we have these 100 files that need to be converted to TypeScript or something like that. And putting this all in a big dashboard, using all kinds of GitHub actions and ESLint magic, it gives us this dashboard where the community can contribute. They can say, okay, what are the little easy ways to open a PR and fix one file? And we can watch our migrations and tech debt and all of this stuff kind of burn down over time and say, is the project and the code base getting better? And it's really great to have metrics around this. So I hope once we get this all working in the Superset community, we can make that a bit more of a open sourceable thing in its own right so other platforms can use it too.
Awesome. And which charts library are you using for that?
So in this case, it's a Superset dashboard. I guess the workflow in general is I wrote an ESLint transformer that takes the normal wall of linting output, converts it into basically a custom CSV file that I stick up in a public Google sheet. And then in Superset, we use this this thing that one of my colleagues wrote called Shillelagh that scrapes CSV or darn near anything into Superset. And then we use a bunch of different e-charts to display it. So there's, different pie charts, for example, or a donut chart is way cooler than a pie chart. But we show those to say, like, okay, which piles of debt or migrations are the biggest, or which files have the most problems, things like that. And then we create a big table with that'll take you to a link right at the line of code where there's something, a hook that could be modified or something like that. So trying to make it easy to surface all of these things and figure out where the biggest or smallest parts are.
Coming from someone who's worked on legacy code bases with class components and like half JavaScript, half TypeScript, that's like a killer feature. That's awesome. I'll definitely look into that.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, my case, I don't have any special picks this time, so I'm going to skip mine. And Evan, just... thank you. So we tried to do this podcast a few weeks ago, but then we had some technical issues and we had a few people available. So we ended up rescheduling it. So thank you again for taking the time. And yeah, man, it was great to have you on the show. And if you ever want to be here again, just hit me up and we'll make it happen.
Fantastic. I loved being here. Thanks for having me. I would do it anytime.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Evan. And thank you for sticking to the end of the show. And I will see you in the next one.